gravity treadmill things like that injured people get to use. I want to do it in a context where I'm not injured. Yeah.
What is that thing?
It's like a treadmill, but you're like in a tent dress from the waist down, and it like you really can run with like only 1/6 of your body weight. So like it's a good way to like runners that are injured or have had like serious impact injuries, things like that, can start practicing running. So it's kind of like, it's basically like dry aqua jogging.
That's pretty cool.
I don't
They're
know.
They're crazy. Oh, I used one of those. Yeah, I've used one of those after I was coming back from my ACL injury.
Was it fun besides the ACL injury?
Just going through the motions of running without having any impact.
Yeah, I mean, running would be so fun if there was just no impact. You could just do it so much longer. That's why you have to run easy.
Easy is the secret.
Easy is the secret. Or on the moon. When accessible. Maybe one day Elon will have like run the moon retreats.
Yeah.
We could do microcosm run retreats on the moon.
We can just go up to NCAR or Boulder. Yeah. For me, that's like being on the moon. It's like a space station up there.
Well, let's record this puppy. We are recording. Uh-huh. Great.
We're live.
We're live.
Yeah. Well, cool.
TJ's got his tiny coffee jar.
Mm-hmm.
Zoe coffee, TJ coffee.
I guess we'll just get into these questions and see where it takes us.
Yeah. Do you want to kick it off?
I think I'm going to start with an easy one.
Ooh, awesome.
So I can
get warmed up.
Get warmed up a little bit. Yeah. Okay, perfect. Should I take a VO2 max test? Great question.
That is a great question. We typically, if someone was ever to offer you like a free VO max test, I would say go for it. That sounds fun. We definitely don't recommend people paying to get a VO2 max test done because honestly, so your VO2 max is a lot less trainable than other aspects of your physiology, like running economy, right? Like if you look at studies, like there are studies on Paula Radcliffe, one of the best marathoners of all time.
I love this.
Throughout her career, her VO2 max barely moved, right? Like especially as she got older. However, her running economy continued to improve, and that is why she has held the world marathon record for so many years. And I think that's a really important thing to point out is that, like your VO2 max doesn't determine your destiny. It's honestly, especially the way we train, it is not that valuable of information, and it can honestly hurt you because should you get a number that is less favorable, you might kind of use it to tell a negative story about yourself and it'll kind of become a self-fulfilling prophecy. Because once again, like, you're probably going to beat people in races who might have a better VO2 max than you because you've just been doing better training and you have better developed running economy. VO2 max becomes like especially less important, like, you know, for an event like Hard Rock. Like I don't care what your VO2 max is. Like it's all about so many other factors. And so we really don't encourage people to spend money to obtain information that is not that useful or necessary for training. What do you think, TJ?
Yeah, I think, we don't want to oversimplify the Paula thing because I think that she actually, her VO2 max peaked at 18 years old.
Correct.
And declined over the course of her career, which is fairly normal. But what didn't decline was her ability to continue to grow her overall aerobic system. And that's why she is still so fast. So yes, VO2 max, it can be movable. Sometimes we do training to help boost it up, but it's such small percentage points. And because it's not a very important kind of energy zone for, you know, ultra endurance athletes to be training, the emphasis should always be on the aerobic system and maybe on critical power as well. In my mind, I think that if we were to overemphasize the necessity of getting those tests, we would end up in the same place that Zoe mentioned, which is maybe a place of a lot of self-limiting beliefs. Some of you may have amazing VO2 max, be able to draw in tons of oxygen. Others may not be able to draw in as much. It honestly, if you put the time and the work in, kind of that genetic aspect to your training, it matters a lot less. There are other coaches out there who ask their athletes to get the VO2 max test in order to determine what kind of training that athlete should do. I personally think that that is the wrong way to approach something, because you, based on some numbers, you're going to tell the athlete what they're capable of and what they're not. And what we've seen is athletes who seemingly have no athletic history become amazing competitive ultra runners on a national and international level. So I think that we can very safely say, you don't need a VO2 max test. Don't fill yourself up with information that may or may not support your training. And I think it's really important too, on the other side of things, like say you have the VO2 max of a Norwegian cross-country skier. Wow, so amazing. Your genetics are working for you as an endurance athlete.
I would like that's some incredible. DNA, please.
Yeah, that's amazing. But there's no replacement for hard, passionate, smart work. So if you've got a great VO2 max, you still need to figure out how to use it, how to train well in order to continue to get better. I like to think about things through that lens rather, you know, some people who are ultra talented have a lot of trouble putting the work in, and therefore they don't realize their true potential. And we're all about finding your potential here. So don't, if you fall on either side of that as somebody who is very gifted genetically or somebody who maybe is kind of average, like we are, then don't worry about it. You know, yeah. Just put the time and the work in.
Yeah. I also feel that occasionally exercise science will overemphasize things that are measurable for the simple fact that they are measurable, rather than looking objectively at how good of predictors they are in the real world. And that is kind of how I feel about VO2 max in a lot of cases.
Oh, man.
I would say it would be a marginally more important thing if you were someone trying to shave 20 seconds off your 218 marathon, then I would be like, you know, let's get curious, right? Like, let's start playing in the margins. But if you're like most of us, then you're not trying to shave 2 seconds off your 218 marathon. And therefore we're looking for the low hanging fruit. We're not trying to play at the margins. Like, we're trying to make the big gains because we're smart, we're busy, we know how to work hard, but we're not trying to, you know, work smarter, not harder all the time, right?
Yeah.
And if you have the choice between getting 20% better and 1% better, pick the 20%.
I hate calling it low hanging fruit because it kind of diminishes, I think, the value in what it is, you know, that consistent hard work.
But I mean, that is the low hanging.
But it's the big percentages.
It's the movable needles.
Yeah.
It's the things that are demonstrably more likely to be trainable in the majority of humans.
Well, yeah. And proven by science to be
true, trainable. Proven by science.
Even, you know, even as you get older.
Yeah. And it's one of those things that, like, I remember when I lived in Boulder, I felt like I was the only idiot in the Whole Foods who like didn't know exactly what their VO2 max was, like off the top of my head. And these were like, it's just like not that usable. And I think people tend to overemphasize it because it sounds so scientific and it makes you sound like you know what you're doing. But knowing what your VO2 max is will absolutely not make you faster. So don't succumb to that pressure.
I would say we could even extend this a little farther and say that you don't need to know your exact heart rate at lactate threshold or
aerobic
threshold.
We also don't recommend max heart rate tests or really any kind of, once again, the more you can separate yourself from the data, for the majority of athletes, the better off your training will be. Once again, if you are really trying to refine a marathon time, there are some times where, like, yes, we are going to obviously not train in ignorance of the numbers, but for the majority of athletes on the majority of days of their training, you don't need to know what your max heart rate is because you should be running so far away from that that it doesn't matter.
Cool. Awesome. Thank you. All right. Let's do, I need another warm-up question. All right, let's get into
it. TJ has hit his intellectual VO2 max early in the run.
Yes, I have. Thank you.
He's maxing out.
This is a clear indication that you have to go out easy. Okay, What are your thoughts on post long run recovery and ice baths? Ooh, great question.
So on recovery generally?
Yes, like post run.
Okay. So fun fact, there's actually not an overwhelming amount of evidence in support of ice baths or icing generally. If you ever see a medical professional and they recommend icing an injury or anything, obviously listen to them. I have a poetry degree. I do not treat injuries. So big old grain of margarita caveat salt there. But for a lot of soft tissue injuries, you actually, or even like the thought with ice baths is that after a big event, you are going to have inflammation. Ice helps reduce, or actually doesn't really reduce. It basically just delays the inflammation. You're going to get inflamed. Inflammation isn't always bad. There are times, in fact, where you want, like, inflammation is part of your body's healing and recovery after big events. And so you actually do want to experience that inflammation so that your body can do its thing and kind of start healing. Like this ice bath thing kind of gained popularity, particularly around like tournament sports, like, you know, elite basketball players playing tournaments where you're like play in the evening and then again at 10 o'clock in the morning. Maybe there could be some benefit to like slowing the onset of inflammation between close together events, but like for the majority of athletes, there's not sufficient scientific evidence to support ice baths. From an MD, from Rachel Brewer, from an MD perspective, agreed, no evidence for ice. I advise ice based on symptomatic improvement, but no evidence to change course of injury recovery. So if you ever get hurt, thank you so much, Rachel. It's so great to have someone who like knows what they're like, really knows what they're talking. I know how to read and communicate scientific information, but yeah. Again, poetry degree. thanks so much for that perspective. Always consult a medical professional if you're worried, but the ice and like the rice method should not, unless advised by a medical professional, should not be your first course of action after an injury.
Yeah, would agree. I think there's some really good, there's a great chapter. I think it's in Endurance, Alex Hutchinson's book about some of that post-run recovery.
And in the Christia Schwanden book that we really like.
There's a lot in that one too. I would recommend guys for post-run recovery, just spending 5 or 10 minutes with your foam roller and doing some really gentle stretching. That kind of stuff goes a long way for preventing injury. I know that after a long run, sometimes, especially on technical trail or trail where there's like a lot of up and down, there's a lot of impact forces, like your body can feel like pretty crushed after. I would advise kind of against finishing runs feeling crushed. I think it really helps to finish runs feeling a little bit more refreshed, so the recovery process is quicker. But yeah, spending some time on the foam roller, really important. A couple other recommendations that I've gotten from a PT that I trust here in Carbondale is that don't attempt to strengthen muscles that already are under a lot of tension, especially after a run. So if you're gonna go and do post-run strength work, if you're beat up from that run, if it's after a big workout, a lot of speed work, maybe for example, your hamstrings are tight and sore, not a good time to start doing some strength. We don't want to put muscles that are already under tension. We don't want to put them under a big stress load with a bunch of strength, especially weighted strength. In those moments, would definitely recommend, again, like foam roller, light stretch. Again, if muscles are tight, don't ice them. If you're going to ice a tight muscle, it's going to get tighter. I think something that we like to do after a long run, especially in winter, is do like an Epsom salt bath, a hot bath, much better for muscles that have been under tension, that are sore. Again, like we're not inhibiting any sort of important and inflammatory response, which is necessary for repair. But at the same time, like we're getting into like a relaxed state. So some of these like recovery things like the ice bath or
massage
or like the cryovac. What is that thing?
Yeah,
like
don't spend ice tank. Save your money. Don't go to a cryo like, sauna.
I'm telling you guys.
Send us the money you would spend on a cryo sauna.
Any of the like benefits that you really get from that are actually just from sitting down and
turning off your phone
30 minutes off of work, off of running, off of, you know, just decompressing for 30 minutes. I'm kind of a big fan of like the afternoon meditation for that instead of an ice bath. You guys can find routines that work for you. But again, like try to operate under those like rules that we kind of, just explain, like don't strengthen muscles that are under tension. Don't ice muscles that are under tension. Try to use some heat. The bath is really great. If a medical professional, a PT, your doctor, whoever that person is recommending that you ice an area of very acute pain, that's between you and your doctor, and you should always take that advice first before any advice from a coach.
He has a jazz degree.
Actually, political science.
And jazz. It's even worse.
Even worse. So, yeah.
The two biggest science-backed recovery modalities are getting enough sleep and eating enough food. Yeah. There is no cryo sauna or infrared pajama set or masseuse on earth.
The pants, who is, the
compression
pants.
There is nothing that beats getting enough sleep and eating enough food. Which is amazing because those are both fairly affordable and accessible. Focus on those kinds of things. But that being said, any recovery modality that you feel reduces your stress and makes you feel good is great. Some people really love massages, and I think that's awesome because it gives you an hour or so where you're not looking at your computer, you're not messing with your kids, you're just like relaxing. And that's the biggest thing for recovery, is like actually relaxing both mentally, emotionally, and physically. That's why we love taking baths, is because like we don't take our phones into the bathtub. That's why he loves meditating. Can't take your phone into meditation. So finding those things that help you like get away from sources of stress, help you just like actually really start to recover. But sleep and food are the big ones.
Yeah, and I think I've had this conversation with quite a few athletes now since everybody's been since March transitioning to working primarily at home, where all of these different aspects of your life are starting to really bleed together. And it becomes really difficult, especially for parents, where you have to, homeschool your kids while you're also responsible for doing 8 hours of work, while you're cleaning your house, while you're preparing dinner, while you're training, when all of these things, and you no longer have like a 30-minute car ride back from a trailhead to decompress, or you no longer have
the time at the gym.
Time at the gym, or the 30-minute commute to work and back, those kind of buffer zones that help to compartmentalize your day. When you don't have those, you're losing some of that recovery time. Those moments that kind of bookend the things that you're doing or kind of set you up from going from one task to another are vital. Something that I recommend to athletes, like if you're blocking off an hour and 10 minutes to do your run, try to block off an hour and 30 minutes. It's just like 10 or 20 minutes more, but that will fit in, 10 minutes of foam rolling and 10 or 15 minutes for like lunch before you go off and start working again. Block off more time if you can. I know for everybody that's not possible, but try to compartmentalize your day like that. It's very difficult for an athlete over many weeks and months to continually go from work to run right back to work. If you're not blocking off a little bit of time for that foam roller, it's not going to get done. I think something that I sometimes do is when I'm decompressing, like I'll take the foam roller onto the bed with me and roll out my calves while I watch Netflix for 20 minutes. Like anything that you can do to like work it into what you're doing.
If you don't absolutely have to be in a meeting, you can just put the mute video and start foam rolling.
And I would recommend it, because guys, without like 30 minutes, an hour, like whatever you have, without a little bit of downtime to decompress, your recovery is really going to suffer, because it's those moments of stillness that really help.
I think, you know, the overall message is it doesn't have to be fancy. You don't need Normatec pants or a live-in masseur or like whatever it is. Just like find space and take it wherever you can, and communicate your needs to the people around you as best as you are able in a tough time.
Yeah, I agree. I think the communication goes a really long way. I know we have just so many parents on the call, and communication between partners is just vital. But I would take this a step further and say, don't just find the space, make the space. We're in unprecedented times right now with how much everybody's working from home. If you don't make the space, it's not going to happen. Because if I know anything for me, I work for myself, and I even struggle to find space in my day to do all the things that I'm talking about. And if I don't make the space happen, I will fill the space up with more and more work, and then I will not rest. I feel like that is part of human nature, that we're always, each individual here who is very high achieving is kind of pushing up against all the time. So make sure you make the space.
Yeah.
Cool.
Rest and recovery.
Yeah.
Less complicated than the recovery industrial complex wants it to be.
I used to really like those Normatec boots. I've got them up in the storage in the attic, but we haven't taken those out in a while. But those used to get me to sit down and just like, I'm a big fan of the massage. So like if anything is like compressing my legs, I feel like it works psychologically for me.
Once again, like if psychologically, if you feel that it works, it works. It doesn't mean it works. Doesn't mean it would check out in a peer-reviewed study.
I want to hear from Drew on this, because when we had a coaching chat with Drew in Arkansas, he had some pretty serious insights about recovery. Drew, can I put you on the spot for a second?
How do you recover?
I was actually just about to type that I love, love, love my Normatec. So recovery is such an interesting thing to me, because me personally, I've changed a lot of what I do to recover over the last year. And I know that sleep is obviously important. Foam rolling is important. The light stretching is important. All these things that TJ and Zoe that y'all are talking about. But the biggest deal to me is your diet and your nutrition. Making sure that when your load is high, or the demand on your body is high, that you're really pumping yourself full of, foods that are high in anti-inflammatory properties. Me, myself, recently, I've just went like full straight 100% plant-based. And I know that that diet's not for everyone, but for me, that's what I had to do to take my running, I guess, to the next level. And so really, I mean, you guys have covered most of this. I just want to reiterate that what you put in your body is kind of what you get out of your body. You put good things in, you'll get good things out.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, once again, emphasizing like input and like the, I think, and you know, this is where, this is Kylie's depth, but a lot of our athletes, particularly after bigger workouts or longer runs, will struggle to fuel themselves sufficiently. Kylie has always been a huge proponent of like, just, you know, smoothies always, all the time, like recovery smoothie, lunch smoothie, dinner smoothie, if you're ever like struggling with appetite suppression. And something that I always emphasize with my athletes is like, I would always rather you eat enough than obsess about eating like clean or like any kind of restriction. You know, just making sure that you're like really trying to feed yourself as well as possible. And not like getting too hung up on the particulars. But if you do feel that you are struggling with the particulars, that is why we have a nutritionist on the team.
Yeah, thanks, Drew. I think that's super important to recognize the role that nutrition does play in recovery. And I think at the basic level, we're talking about making sure that you are replacing all of the calories that were burned on that run. And not necessarily via calorie counting, but to make sure that you're just aware that you need protein, carbohydrate following a run. We've had really great conversation with Kylie more than once on the nutrition side of post-run recovery. And she's actually written up a really great kind of 101 that's on the blog. I would recommend if you guys are interested in the particular balance of protein to carbohydrate and all of that, to check out those resources. Drew, I definitely feel you on the quality of the calories. I think quantity is obviously the most vital, right? But then second,
but then again, like, you know, eating 1200 calories of pretzel sticks, suboptimal for recovery.
I would agree. I think we could put 1200 calories of some better foods in,
like tater tot nachos.
But if your option is no calories or 1200 calories of potato chips, I would like you to eat 1200 calories of potato chips following your run rather than to eat nothing. I know that this has been a particular struggle of mine early on in my running career, is that after really long races or long events, my recovery would suffer because I would have, when I'm under stress, I lose my appetite. And it's very difficult for me to want to eat. In fact, I've had it so bad that after a big race where I've really gone to the well, I haven't been able to eat well for over a week after. We really want to avoid these situations because it will affect months of your training. So again, like, smoothies are huge. Tom, I might stay away from a before bed smoothie because it's too much carbohydrate.
Actually, Kylie has some recommendations for like high protein.
I think a high protein smoothie is a good choice. But
follow Kylie on Instagram for amazing snack suggestions, like on the daily.
And smoothies post run are definitely a lot more, I think, satiating and easier to get down, especially if you've gone a little bit hard and you're having a stress reaction, it's affecting your appetite.
Or if you're just busy.
Yeah. Or if you're busy. Well, I don't know.
I
don't want to open the up.
I was just going to say, I usually recommend like half a smoothie, before bed. So instead of doing like your typical 16 to 20 ouncer, do like 8 to 10 ounces, and then it's a little bit lower in carb, but still you're getting in some protein.
Yeah.
So I actually do recommend that as a pre-bedtime ritual for people that are doing, you know, over an hour or an hour and a half of training.
Awesome. Yeah. But low carb.
Yeah, I usually say between like 20 and 30 grams of carbs. Once you go much more over that, then it can interrupt recovery and sleep that you're trying to actually promote. So,
yeah, cool. It's once again, if you're interested in this stuff, this is why we hire, one of the reasons that Kylie works so closely with us is because every recommendation needs to be very much tailored towards you as an individual, what your training schedule is. And we can't recommend, you know, working with, like, just recruit people to your team, right? Like, I know a lot of people have either worked with Kylie or have their own nutritionist. And that's just like such an amazing way to really make sure that you are getting what you need to take your training where you want to go with it. Like, this is something that, like, I, you know, we're huge, like, we love food. We're very enthusiastic. Like, we do a lot of research about it. But even so, we recognize the limits of our own expertise and our own blind spots when it comes to fueling ourselves. And that's why, like, TJ's worked with Kylie to up his protein intake. I've worked with her to work on an iron deficiency. It's okay if you, you know, think that you're a very smart, capable, you know, like, person, and you still struggle to fuel to the best of your abilities. And that's why we have people like Kylie who have like multiple higher degrees in this stuff.
Oh my God, guys, utilize your resources, nutritionists, registered dietitians, strength coaches,
mental health professionals. Shout out to Sarah Strong.
Oh my
gosh. Down in the corner of my screen.
I think that this is kind of, if we really want to continue to dissect the recovery.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, here's what you do for recovery is like get a plan from a nutritionist and like execute that, and then like go to therapy once a week. That's good recovery. And then like meditate, and then you know, all these things take time and resources that like are always thin on the ground for a lot of people. So, you know, just let us know if there's ever any way we can connect you with additional resources or support you in any way, because within this team, we have such an amazing network of humans, and we understand that it's like stuff is stressful. You know, like in terms of pandemic stuff can be financially stressful. We're here to just like connect you with as many resources as we have. And that's why it's so important to us to have such a robust community and to really support, you know, our nutrition resources, our mental health resources, strength resources. Like these are things that we really, really believe in. And once again, if you, you know, were trying to decide between like seeking therapy or investing in massage pants, my recommendation would always be find a therapist.
Yeah. And another thing that I'm recommending for people who are really, really struggling with the balance of being an at-home parent while training, while trying to, you know, find time to recover, while having bad sleep, is taking a day off of training and using that time to talk to a professional rather than
go try to force a day of training.
Guys, I can't say this enough. If you are struggling, skip a day of running and schedule a weekly appointment with a therapist. I am pushing multiple people right now to do this. I really want to see some of my athletes step up and kind of get these resources that they need. It is absolutely vital to have as many people on your team as possible. These are unprecedented times, very challenging.
And if you're not taking care of yourself mentally, again, no massage, no bubble bath, like nothing is going to make up for if you have something, you know, going on like above the neck, like there's nothing you can do that's gonna make up for that. Yeah. Like your brain is a body part and you have to take care, and it's your most precious body part, right? Like that's where all the good stuff is. Like, you know, you're not gonna succeed in a 50K if you're not taking very good care of your mental health. You're not gonna, you know, that's, and like, not that you should just do it to like get a competitive edge or whatever. You should take care of it because it's special and we love your brain. And we're here to connect you with resources to help take care of that. You know, if it's something that you feel like, you know, therapy is either a struggle time-wise or financially, like Bigger Than the Trail is a resource that connects people with affordable on-demand online counseling geared at trail runners. Sarah Strong, once again, is an ambassador for Bigger Than the Trail. Teammate, team member Tommy founded Bigger Than the Trail. And that's an incredible resource if like mental health care is something you're new to or just they're curious about, but like aren't totally sure how to get started. I think given that, like, if you took like every recovery modality away from me, like the things I would cling to the most tightly are therapy, sleep, food.
Love it. I love it. All right. Moving on. Think we can do three big questions in 20 minutes. I'm
it started out ice baths and then we ended at therapy.
Four. Oh my God. Okay.
That's just like anytime you start a conversation with me generally, it's like, how was your day? And I'm like, let me tell you about the importance of mental health care. And they're like, you seem like you're doing great.
All right, Zoe, come on. We got to stay on topic here. This is a really important question. Okay. And I think only you can answer this. How does one keep their electronics charged on long runs?
Yeah, so great question. I think it depends on the electronic. I'm assuming you're talking about phone.
Phones,
or you watches, have a Garmin watch and it dies phones? After like 5 hours. So my suggestion is if you have a Garmin, upgrade to a Suunto or Coros because Garmin's battery life is suboptimal. I'm not paid. This is just like, I'm a professional gear reviewer and Garmins are like, if you're an ultra runner, you got to upgrade. Yeah. Oh, right. So any other electronics, like a phone, get one of those little USB sticks. They always give those out at like conferences and they have them at like gas stations and stuff. That's a great method. I remember when I did the first time I did rim to rim to rim, I definitely had to I had an old iPhone. I had to recharge it like 3 times on that run because I was like listening to my iPhone the whole time. Then I would have to like charge it, listen to it. Just get a little little USB power stick, stick that in your vest.
I recommend those. They're not very heavy. They fit well in a vest. You can get, you know,
it's like the size of a thing of noon.
Yeah, it's like a noon. Yeah, exactly.
Noon tube.
Those are perfect. Those do the trick too. If you're on a really long run, I suppose like 48 hours. Yeah.
But I don't think there's any way that you can like, there's no like in-flight fueling for a watch or anything.
No, you can't change a battery in an iPhone.
Yeah.
Well, cool. All right. So get that power stick.
Power stick.
Is that what they're called? Power stick.
I think so.
Power stick.
I have this thing called a foozie, like a phone koozie. And I love it. And it insulates. I just got it for Christmas and it's like already saved my, like my phone has not died at all since I've started using it.
Yeah.
So I recommend.
Those are great for cold weather, especially to insulate your phone and keep moisture off of it.
I usually keep my phone in my sports bra and I've also destroyed like two phones that way, but I don't learn quickly.
I think the phone in the front pouch in the vest is also really risky because your flask can sometimes like drip all over your phone and then it just destroys it.
Yeah. I feel like my phone is always covered in like gels too. Ugh. Everything I own is covered in like maple syrup and like pretzel shards.
All right. Let's we'll keep it going here. Question number four of the morning. We are actually doing quite well. How do I improve my downhill running?
So a broad suggestion is doing something like some amount of strength training, particularly backward stepping lunges with a little bit of weight that helps prep your eccentric muscles. And that's one component, but just making sure you're doing a little bit of strength, that's something that can help give you a little bit of confidence in terms of downhill running. Another thing is a lot of, like, I think there's kind of a physical aspect of downhill running and the mental aspect. Mentally, the best thing you can do is just understand that you will fall at some point while running, and that, I mean, particularly trail running, and that is okay. We've, once again, no one has died from downhill running on our team, which is great.
Some stitches. Maybe.
We've had some stitches. Yeah. get good dental insurance. And I think it's just like getting comfortable being uncomfortable. Because if every time you run downhill, I remember every time, like I used to run, particularly with TJ, who's quite a good downhiller, I would always be like, I don't want to get uncomfortable today. I'll get uncomfortable next time I have an opportunity to go downhill. And I think it's dismantling that mindset a little bit and telling yourself, like, let's work on getting a little bit uncomfortable today, like push it just a little bit today. And you don't need to do that every time you hit the trail, every time you find a downhill, but just make a concerted effort, like in long runs especially, or maybe even in workouts, to say, I'm going to take this downhill a little more aggressively than I normally would, and start being intentional about building up your tolerance.
Yeah, I would also say a couple things that you probably don't notice that you're doing already, which it helps improve your downhill running ability, is the stride work and short duration intervals, like maybe 1 and 2 minutes. Workouts where you're really starting to improve your turnover and your leg speed. Downhill running is all about upping your cadence and being able to keep your legs moving while gravity starts to drag you down the hill. So improving that, basically strides, getting comfortable moving faster, upping, you know, your speed a little bit in small doses, that is huge. Another great place to start is on, you know, smoother, steeper downhills where the gravity is going to take you, but the terrain isn't going to ask of you to like tap dance your way down through all the rocks. So one thing that I like to do at the beginning of like a trail running season is to get on some steeper kind of dirt roads, a little bit of a softer surface, because the impact forces are obviously higher when you're running downhill. So if you're running downhill hard, you'll crush your legs, and then it'll be a lot harder to run well the rest of the week as your body kind of adapts to that new stress. So take the variables out, make it a steep downhill, but on like a smooth dirt road or, you know, smooth single track, and lean into the downhill and practice that a little bit and see if you can get your legs to kind of keep up with you as gravity naturally makes you go faster.
Learn to fight against gravity less.
Yeah, take exactly.
Smaller steps.
And as you get better at that, slowly transition that into more technical terrain. In the more technical terrain, it's going to require a lot less emphasis on, you know, each step, and more of an emphasis on, you know, all of these small steps. So you can also do some ladder drills and things like that, maybe during your strength work, that can help kind of increase your ability to be springy off of each step and kind of be able to be to improve your agility. I think that those things help too. Again, like if you really want to work on that stuff, I recommend reaching out to Emily Holmes, Little Summits, getting some like very specific to you strength work that can help with that. That component is huge, but I think for a lot of people, downhill running is very mental. So you approach it in the same way that you approach any challenge. You start small and through, you know, small bouts of exposure, continue to get better and better. And just know that by working on your strides, by doing, you know, 1 or 2 minute intervals, even 3 minute intervals for athletes who are stronger, where you're running at a higher turnover rate for longer, very, very beneficial and will help you run faster downhill. It's all about keeping those legs going. I don't want to get into too much of the technical aspects of like, yes, work on your core. Yes, like
I like ladder working drills on
balance and all and of that.
Like a ski or skater jumps.
Yeah.
For like stability. But I think mostly for me, that stuff just builds confidence. And then when I actually get to run downhill, I'm like, well, I've done ladder drills and ski, like, and then skater jumps. So like, you know, that helps. But I think ultimately it's just like, I think for me, it's also understanding that like, I don't view myself as like a particularly brave person. And it's like recognizing like, I have fear of falling while running downhill. That's okay. That feeling is not antithetical to trying to run downhill faster and harder. And like accepting that fear and how I feel about it, but not letting how I feel dictate what I do when I run.
Yeah, I think it's totally, it's super mental like that. You can also practice visualization techniques. You can visualize yourself crushing the technical downhill and then trying to put that into
what's
action.
What's that crazy race that we watched? The one in Italy where they're like coming down that glacial tarn? What was that like?
That was a Solomon.
Yeah, this Golden Trail. Golden
Trail races. Those people are next level.
Those people are, I know, I'm just like, holy, I feel like I'm going to see someone's ACL pop out in a second. But I feel like, you know, I don't know, watching stuff, I'm like, wow, that person's a boss. And if like the next time I get to like run down a scree field, I can channel like 1% more of that bossness, that can help. You know, I think it's just about like telling yourself like, it's okay to be scared of this stuff. Most likely it will not hurt you. And you just have to get comfortable being uncomfortable and like practice.
Practice is important. Not emphasizing any one step is huge in technical downhill running. So don't emphasize every single foot plant. Just know that if you slip on one foot,
you have
the other one to get you and you're continuing to move forward.
Yeah, don't overly invest in any one strike. And I think that's big. And also like, I think this is something I've learned from skiing is don't look directly at your feet, look like 6 feet in front of you.
Yeah, good tip. Cool, let's keep this flowing, Zoe.
Derek and Zach say they're going to punk shows to help their downhill running. So. Should this pandemic end, we should all absolutely go to like a crazy house show and
okay, you guys can do that. I'm adverse to that sounds too
intense. He goes to jazz shows.
All right, with everything going on right now and tons of races being postponed or canceled, I'm interested in celebrating my training by trying an FKT. Do you have any advice for how to find a fun FKT and set a goal time?
Yeah, I think in terms of finding FKTs, the best resource is the fastestknowntime.com website. And you can look like search by geographical region. So, you know, look in your region, see what's there and click on the routes and like actually like do your homework on these things. And just like investigate, you know, like you can click on the route and you can see the history of the times. And there's a lot of low hanging fruit style FKTs out there, mm-hmm. right? And then your goal time should be faster than whatever is listed. That's how you FKT.
I would take this a step further and to say, yes, that's a great way to find your events and like your races, I guess your FKT specifically, but also like an FKT, you could just go for a fast time on a loop that interests you and not worry about setting or a record breaking time.
So you can do a PFKT and that's awesome.
Yeah. One that we love to do here is the four pass loop, where we always try to push ourselves in relation to the fastest times that have been set on that loop. But at no point have we ever gone out
trying to think of the Brittany Charbonneau
to like break those times. So I always recommend like athletes, you know, if you have a race that's postponed and you've been training really hard and you're fit and prepared, find something that's probably a little bit shorter. So not, you know, maybe not an ultra, but maybe something that's a marathon or 20 miles. where the recovery time will be less impactful to your overall training afterwards. Find that kind of loop or out and back, something that like really speaks to you, that's in terrain that you find challenging and adventurous. And go and put yourself out there. If it's like going for the FKT and trying to set a record breaking time, awesome. But also make sure that you have your kind of like process oriented goals for that event too. And you look at it through the lens of like, this is not as much about breaking records as it is about having like a really quality focused training day. Mm-hmm. I think having that lens is particularly important. That's how I looked at my recent FKT. I wasn't even considering an FKT. I was considering a focused training day. And that those kind of things I think are really important. They also take the pressure off of you when, you know, if your time isn't what you expected, or if you're crushing it, or if like anything unexpected happens out there. Would you agree with that?
I would. And I also would like to speak directly to the amazing women on our team. And I will say that there are a lot of routes out there begging for fast, badass women to put aggressive times up. We set records so they can be broken. And I think that a lot of, like, I've had women on the team come to me and say, like, I'm interested in this FKT, but I don't know, no woman's ever done it. Am I gonna look dumb if I go and set like a soft time or whatever? Or like, you know, does it even count if I'm the first person to do it? And I would say it's even more important you go and do it, because it's basically like you rolling out a red carpet for some other woman to get inspired and come along and like piggyback off your hard work and achieve something amazing. And like, as women, that is one of the best things we can do for this sport, right? Is just open doors for each other and say like, hey, look, I did this cool thing. Please come beat my time. Like, that's always my perspective on FKTs, is I want to go out there and set a really high bar and challenge other women to get involved and challenge themselves as well, right? So like, don't be afraid about like trying something new, putting yourself out there and like opening yourself up to vulnerability and like just saying like, hey, I was the first one to ever set this FKT, like come break it, you know, or don't, like, you know. But I think that there's a huge gap. This is something I've researched at Trail Runner Magazine a lot, is that like 70% of FKTs are set by men. There's a huge gender gap when it comes to women having the confidence to own up and say like, I wanna set an aggressive time on this thing. So if you're a woman who's even a little bit curious about going for an FKT, freaking do it. The worst case scenario is you don't get it and no one cares and the world keeps spinning and you still get to treat yourself to a pizza. And that is an amazing outcome. So put yourself out there, be vulnerable, be aggressive, open doors for other women, set a high bar to challenge others.
Yeah, that's awesome, Zoe. I think first known times to take
just as valuable
courage and, yeah, you know, just as important, setting the routes that, you know, people will later come and put faster times down is how we continue to grow this sport. I think particularly for women. Absolutely. All right. Should we wrap this up with our final question? I think this is a tough question. Why don't I get a runner's high? So many people say running relieves their stress, and I don't feel that way at all.
I would say to this person, we are the same. Running is not like a stress relieving activity for me. Running is my job. It's both of my jobs. It's like all three of my jobs, like as an elite runner, a coach, and the editor, an editor at Trail Runner Magazine. It's very hard for me to like-
And a podcaster.
And a podcaster. It's like hard for me to go on a run and be like, oh my God, I just feel like I'm getting a brain massage. Like, not so much. Also physically, and I know we talk about this a lot, but physiologically, your body doesn't care at all if you feel relaxed by your run. It is still releasing cortisol. So, you know, whether or not you feel like it's a moving meditation, your body is still releasing a crap storm of stress-related hormones. And that is why we need to be very careful about being overly dependent on exercise as stress relief. So runner's high, there's not a lot of great research on this. However, there's like two kinds of things here. Like, exercise tends to release endorphins, which is kind of like this soft feeling of like, I feel better after I exercise, which is good and positive. And that's one of the reasons that we like exercise, but again, don't want to become overly invested in running as like our only source of endorphins in life, right? Like, chocolate can also release endorphins. You would definitely never go all in on only eating chocolate as your only source of joy in life.
You might.
You might. I've been close at times. TJ is literally eating chocolate right now at 8:55 a.m., which is incredible. Anti-inflammatory, I think. Don't fact check me on that. Then there's the other runner's high, which is when if you are running hard, your body will be like, oh my God, we should release opioids, basically. Which is something that like people will feel during workouts, races. It's not really something that you should feel on an easy run. Like this, like it's something that like, you know it when you felt it, right? Like I think everyone's at some point had like this rush of like, whoa, running is amazing. And I feel like I'm going to cry out here in the middle of the woods for like absolutely no reason. That's what I would define as like an actual runner's high. If you're just feeling that on easy runs, that might mean you're going a little bit too hard. It also does take like a certain level of fitness to be able to push yourself to the point where your body is like, oh my God, we need to like release stress relief and like pain relieving hormones or chemicals in your brain. And that is not a place we want to go too frequently.
Yeah.
I will also, it's super normal to not get a runner's high. That's totally fine and okay. But you should not go out on every run seeking a runner's high because that's not possible and it's not healthy.
Most people, feel like running is very hard. And that's why we are working with you guys to make running feel a lot easier. I think reframing the runner's high and trying to find more of a flow state on your runs is a much healthier approach because science, the limited science out there tells us that runner's highs generally come when athletes are going way too hard in pushing themselves. For the reasons that Zoe said. So we can kind of get away from our understanding, our very basic understanding of a runner's high and think about trying to find
happiness,
joy, a flow state out there.
Because like, instead of going to the point where your brain is like, let's give her a hit of opioids, I think it's like trying to live most of my life in a place where I'm like, listening to an audiobook on a golf course is fun. You know?
Yeah, like, I would
lower your bar.
I would like to also say that, you know, music can be really helpful in developing that flow state. So if you guys haven't, I'm sure most of you listen to music while you're running, right?
TJ listens to jazz while running, which is bizarre.
But it works for me. Like it helps me find my flow state on most of my runs. What doesn't help me is a really mentally and emotionally engaging podcast or audiobook. That will destroy my flow out there.
I have literally listened to Infinite Jest while running. We are both intolerable in different ways.
It's so funny. Anyways, I would recommend exploring kind of different things that help provoke the sensations that you're looking for. Running inherently causes a lot of stress. So if you're looking for stress relief out there, you're looking at this incorrectly. I don't want to.
It's one tool in your toolbox, right?
Yeah.
And I think the important thing is like, it's one of those things where like we want to move our bodies because that can definitely help our mental health. But if at any point you feel I must run to improve my mental health, then you need to not run to improve your mental health. Whenever you feel like you're clinging very tightly to it, or like if you're, you know, I think there's been times when I've been like, to an athlete, I've been like, hey, let's not run tomorrow. Let's rest because like you're stressed, or like I'm seeing things that make me feel that we could be edging close to burnout or injury. And then the athlete's like, no, 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 I have to run. That's when I'm like, whoa, we definitely need to not run because like, gee dang, something is going on here that exercise cannot address. Let's reach out to your nutritionist, pastor, mental health expert, like whatever it is. You need a non-Zoe expert to address this.
Yeah. Something that really helps, I think, and just maybe the final word on this, if you're a meditator, if you're somebody who spends time engaging with your breath, you may find it easier to enter a relaxed state on your run that feels more therapeutic and stress relieving. If you don't have kind of the other side of the spectrum where you're very attuned to your breath, you might be running really hard, which is kind of helping you get these runner's highs and also is creating a lot of extra stress and impact force on your body. I would recommend to everybody, as I always do, try to think about starting a meditation practice. It will allow you to have a more kind of evolved and greater kind of spectrum of understanding about how our breath really affects the way we feel, whether we're running, whether we're at work. Sometimes a lack of breathing is inhibiting our ability to find that flow state. Try to relax into your easy runs. Try to breathe out tension in your body. If you want it to be therapeutic, you need to kind of initiate those processes. For a lot of people, that involves like relaxing your shoulders. Each exhalation, just like trying to really relax your stride. If you're out there pounding the pavement, you're gonna, you know, it's no wonder why the run isn't stress relieving or it's not providing the space that you want it to provide you. So I would, you know, encourage you to think about the stillness aspect of space and like stress relief. Also, you know, just it'll help with body awareness and things like that.
And with all things, it's a practice, right? I think something we've seen a lot is like, we'll have an athlete that we'll recommend meditation to, and they'll be like, I meditated for 20 minutes this morning and I don't feel any better. Why not? And I'm like, let's try doing it 20 minutes a day for like 3 to 4 months. And then we can assess, right? Like, you're not going to feel good after you do yoga for the first time, or you run for the first time, or you go to therapy for the first time. Like, it's a practice. It's an ongoing practice. All the things that matter for mental and physical health are a practice. Eating one healthy meal is not going to like be a game changer. It's about eating 3 healthy meals a day for like years and years. It's about running once a day for years and years and years. It's about going to therapy once a week for years and years and years. Like, all of these things are compounding, and it's an ongoing practice that you must engage intentionally in, and expecting like one 20-minute meditation or yoga session or walk or whatever it is to be a game changer is setting yourself up for failure. So know that it, like, I am not like, I am a high strung, super annoying, neurotic person, and I like hate meditation. And it took like months for me to be like, okay, I'm starting to see the benefits. Like, I freaking hate people telling me to like do yoga. And like, I was not one of those people that used to be like very attuned to their mental health. And it took years of engaging in these things for me to realize like, oh, you just have to like work hard at it. And like, it's okay to be like a weird, restless person who sucks at meditation, because you have to practice it. It's like anything, right? Like, no one's born just like good at running. You practice it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the more that you run, the easier it feels, the more that space really works for you as a space for some relief and some therapy, and, you know, provide some therapeutic principles, like lifting your mood up and things like that, where, you know, we do know, and science does tell us, that exercise helps make us feel better and all of that. But we really want to make sure, like anything, we're not overemphasizing one thing, that we're approaching this from a place of health and well-being. I feel like maybe we'll make that the final word. Approach all that you do from that same place. I think that that's really important. And just know that, you know, the small steps, they add up. So if you're looking to make running more stress relieving, you're searching for a runner's high, you know, give yourself time. You know, we both go through many months of never having a runner's high on a run, and then go through weeks of having runner's high. So it really depends. A lot of other factors contribute to how great your runs feel. I think many of you are starting to build your awareness and perspective around that through the training process. So many things just affect the quality of the run. Yeah. So keep that in mind.
Practice. Yeah. Take care of yourself.
All right. Well, we have to drive to Utah. So we will see you guys next Friday for another rapid fire. We're running out of questions. I hope you guys will provide us some, or else we'll
just talk about jazz and poetry.
We will have a jazz and poetry conversation next Friday without some questions. Guys, 1 week, please send us some questions, and
weird.
We look forward to it. We'll be having a talk about Charlie Parker next week. Bye. Have a great weekend.